Balance Beam, written by CJ Marlowe and read by the Patty.
A Warehouse 13 fic.
Rated mature. Summary. Micah doesn't always have every step under control. Additional notes following the fic. "This is beautiful," said Micah, pulling a sheer blouse out of the trunk and holding it out at arm's length so that the light from the open window glowed through it. "You have excellent taste." "I have eccentric taste that just happens to match the current fashions," said H.G. Helena, glancing over and smiling a little, privately, like there was a secret hidden in her words or the sunshine. "I stole that one." "Did you?" said Micah, clutching it to her chest as though Helena might choose that moment to steal it again. "I did have to be resourceful while I was getting on my feet. Don't worry. I only steal from places that look like they could afford it. Like Robin Hood, in a way." "You know, that's not how Robin Hood actually operated, right? He didn't keep what he stole." "That depends entirely on which version of the legend you choose to believe," said Helena, sending out a line of photographs on her wardrobe, people Micah didn't recognize and would never know. "If I'd had Robin Hood's hat, it would have been much easier to acquire the rest of my wardrobe." "Robin Hood's not a real person," said Micah. "And if he was, I think I'd rather have his arrows." "Better in a combat situation. Less useful when you're trying to pilfer from Chanel," said Helena. "And he certainly was a real person, though he kept rather more of his treasures than is traditionally recounted. We do tend to romanticize these things over time, don't we?" "Well, you don't strike me as a hat person, anyway." Micah hung the blouse carefully in Helena's closet with the others, the room already looking lived in, where her own had been desperately sparse for too long, the room of someone who was far more adaptable. "In my day, we were all hat people," said Helena. "I could have made it look quite stylish." "I'm pretty sure you could make anything look stylish," said Micah, and was glad she was looking in the closet as those words skidded out. "Even with that feather." "It doesn't actually have a feather," said Helena. "And it's not a hideous green either." "Wait, so it is a real thing?" Helena just smiled mysteriously again and pulled a pair of black boots from the trunk, brushing a bit of invisible dust from them. They didn't look old exactly, just broken in. Something you'd spend years doing, not weeks or months. Something Helena had for a long time. "There's plenty more to unpack," said Helena. Though it wasn't that she had a lot of things so much as each of her things seemed to wholly inhabit the space it was in, much like Helena herself. "You could give me a hand if you're done admiring my taste." It was ostensibly what she was here to do, though it seemed to be taking longer with Micah's help than it would have if Helena had just done it all herself the moment her belongings arrived, flung across the world with surprising speed, or perhaps merely flung across town, given Helena's confidence and ambitions. "What's this?" said Micah, pulling a wooden box from a deep corner of the trunk, playing with an unlocked latch. "Jewelry, maybe. Mechanical devices. Ribbons." "Not that one," said Helena, smoothly plucking it from Micah's hands and slipping it into a drawer before Micah could do more than blink. "Something with personal value, then, with a reaction like that. Letters, photographs, locks of hair encased in glass. What's... You're very curious, aren't you?" "It's in the job description," she said, but she didn't press once the drawer was pushed firmly shut. "What's left in the trunk?" "This and that," said Helena. "My umbrella, a pair of stockings, cogs and springs, a few unmentionables." She pulled out a slip of silk, clearing one of the aforementioned unmentionables, and passed it over to Micah without a second thought or glance. "Top right drawer, if you wouldn't mind." Micah didn't mean to stare at them. She was just surprised. That was all. Instead of putting them away promptly, she let them slip across her fingers for a moment. "Any time now." "Sorry," she said, balling them in her fist. "I didn't mean to." "I'm wearing a very similar pair right now," said Helena. "If you were wondering." "I wasn't," said Micah, and hastily shoved them in the drawer. As soon as she did, she couldn't help thinking they were going to wrinkle now, but couldn't actually bring herself to open the drawer again and fold them more neatly, Knowing the look Helena would have had on her face if she did. "It's all right if you were," said Helena, very carefully laying her stockings out over the back of the chair. "I'm flattered." "I wasn't," Micah said again, but of course now that Helena had put the thought in her head, she was. "They're blue, though," said Helena. "Do you want to see?" "I..." said Micah, but she didn't say anything while Helena popped the button on her pants, peeled back a flap, and let a flash of blue silk show. "Not the most practical of undergarments, but I do like the feel of them," she said. "Would you like to feel them too?" Micah tried to say that it was all right, that it was unnecessary, but she didn't say anything at all, and she didn't resist when Helena took her wrist and brought it first to her waist, then beneath the flap of her pants to skim her fingers over the fabric. "Soft," she said. "Warm." She wished she could bite her own tongue off so that no more words could slip out, but Helena just smiled at her and drew her hand a little further down. Softer, warmer. There was a point when Helena stopped guiding her, and Micah started moving on her own, but she couldn't pinpoint when it was. She just knew that a few moments later, her hand was between Helena's legs, and Helena had both hands on her, drawing her forward into a kiss. It felt both unexpected and a long time coming. "You're quite extraordinary, Micah Baring," said Helena, then sank her teeth lightly into Micah's lower lip, just enough that Micah could feel the sting before she let go again. Micah didn't know about that, but she was in no position to argue, or talk at all, really, since her natural inclination was to say something awkward at a moment like this. She wondered if it was all a game, another strategic move, until Helena bit her own lip, and just for that moment looked completely full of wanting. It was enough. Micah moved her hand, pushing gently between Helena's legs, and Helena's lips parted again, her chest rising with a desperate breath. She clutched at Micah's sleeves and kissed her again, hard and sweet and demanding, and Micah's heart pounded as she hooked a finger around the edge of Helena's silk panties and started to slip beneath. "My, you are a very curious girl, aren't you?" said Helena breathlessly. "Always wanting to know what's inside." Micah felt like a tease of the worst kind when she pulled her hand back, let her damp fingertips rest against the fabric over Helena's hip, and breathed against her shoulder, a little too fast and a little too shallow. Helena's skin was flushed, warm, and Micah could still feel her chest moving with each breath. "I'm not sure I'm..." Micah wasn't even sure how she wanted to finish that sentence. Interested? That would have been a naked lie. Ready? Closer, but not entirely honest either. Micah liked to plan things. She liked to think them through. She liked lists and maps and schedules. She liked knowing what she was getting into. Helena buttoned her pants with one hand, her knuckles brushing up against Micah's shirt as they still stood so close together. "You could come back after dinner," she said, lifting her head and finally moving back far enough that they could look one another in the eye again. "I've got a few things left to unpack. I could use the extra set of hands." "You could finish a lot faster without me." Helena arched an eyebrow, and Micah had to look down before something else slipped out the wrong way. "Maybe that's not what I need your hands for," she said. When she smiled this time, Micah smiled back. And if she didn't say anything as she straightened her shirt and slipped out of Helena's new room, it was only because Helena had said it all so perfectly already. A few hours ought to be enough time to make a plan. After all, she was used to working with a lot less these days. The end. This has been Balance Beam, written by CJ Marlowe and read by The Patty for the informal Twitter Podfic Exchange 2014 for Silly Cleo. The original story text can be found at archiveofourown.org/works/245046. Agents and eBay. Written by M. Arsu and read by The Patty. A Warehouse 13 fic. Summary. It's amazing what can be found on eBay. Additional notes following the fic. Micah has always been a believer of accepting the consequences of her bad decisions. They're learning experiences. It's a belief that's hard to keep in mind when she receives the email letting her know she's won her auction on eBay. Micah can almost remember being in Tokyo and laying on her hotel bed after drinking too much sake and deciding to buy Pete his Christmas present. She's not sure how she came to the conclusion that spending $1,531.29 on a first-generation Tamagotchi was a good idea, but it's clear she did. Still, one of the good things about living in Univille was that she could afford to pay for the thing and keep her eBay buyer rating up. She ends up giving it to Pete for his birthday instead of Christmas and winning the Best Present Award. Up until Pete forgets to feed the thing a week later, and suddenly the B&B is home to a rather large, pixelated, and hungry monster that's literally eating everything in the fridge. Up to, and including the racks and light bulb. It actually doesn't take long to resolve the issue. Pete just needs to push some buttons on the controller. But they still need a new fridge, and the warehouse ends up with a new virtual pet that constantly has Artie yelling at Pete whenever it beeps. Pete still says it's the best present, though, so Micah considers it a win overall. At least until she submits a reimbursement form and has to look Artie in the eye as he sees how much she paid for the thing. She remains impassive to his, "Really?" and the mutters of, "Micah, Micah, Micah," as he files the claim. But she knows she'll have to find something really nice for Artie's birthday if she's ever going to live this down. Steve. "Jinxie, what did I tell you about eBay?" Claudia yells from where she's crouched behind the couch. Steve waits until the latest round of gunfire stops before answering as he runs to join her. "That it's awesome and you find the coolest things?" "Okay, yes, I said that," Claudia agrees before shaking her finger at him disapprovingly. "But I also remember saying never to go on it when drunk." "I wasn't drunk," he protests, because he hadn't been. There had been no alcohol consumed. The look Claudia gives him clearly states that semantics won't get him out of the cleanup. Under the influence of an artifact, same difference. The argument is cut off as another burst of gunfire starts up and Steve winces as the remaining pictures on the wall opposite them are utterly destroyed. Luckily, Pete and Micah finally show up with the goo before any more of Lena's things can be demolished. After everything, even standing in the room dripping with purple goo, Steve can't help but smile because he has an original Ager gun from his Civil War, and that's actually worth the week it'll take him to clean up the front room of the B&B. Although, looking at the ceiling, he can't help but ask, "Did you really need that much goo?" "Had to be thorough," Micah replies with a smile as she high-fives Pete. Claudia. If Claudia could spare the energy to talk, she'd defend herself. She'd say she hadn't been drinking. She just thought it would be really neat if the listing was real. Not that she actually thought somebody would be selling the original version of Ada Lovelace's notes on eBay, because that was ridiculous. She'd been looking forward to writing a scathing review about the fake listing. But they were real, and now Claudia can't look away from the computer in front of her. She's programming. She isn't quite sure what she's programming, but she knows she has to finish the program. "Did Ada Lovelace have some sort of dream project or something?" she can hear Pete asking behind her. "I don't know. The person we normally ask is too busy typing." Micah sounds frustrated, and Claudia can really sympathize. She hasn't stopped typing in almost 12 hours, and she's too tired to even pay attention to what she's typing anymore. "We've got it," Jinxie yells as he runs into the room, and Claudia has never been happier to hear Steve's voice, since she brought him back to life. Artie does his level best to kill her happiness, though, as he follows Steve into the room. "We think we've got it. Maybe." "What? What do you maybe have?" Claudia knows she must be in bad shape if Pete has the "I'm really scared for someone I love and trying not to cry" sound in his voice. "This!" Artie sounds excited. But she can't see what he's holding, at least not until he sets it down next to her keyboard. It takes her a second to recognize the arithmometer, and even then she's confused. It's an arithmometer, Steve tells Pete and Micah. Pretty much the original mechanical calculator. The only real break in production between 1851 and 1915 was a 22-year period where everyone was focused on Babbage's difference engine. Which had a Lovelace worked on! The notes are for it! Micah shouts as she gets what Artie and Steve are hoping will happen. We just need to get our hands on it, Steve says. We think. If Lovelace and Babbage stop the arithmometer, maybe the arithmometer will stop Lovelace. Pete doesn't say anything, but suddenly his hands are gripping her wrists and pulling them off the keyboard. It works this time, unlike previous attempts, because he's not trying to get her to go very far. Just a few inches to the left. Her hands fall on the arithmometer, and the compulsion to type is gone. All the manic energy drains out of her, and she can barely mutter, "Thanks," before falling asleep. Pete. Pete has never accidentally bought an artifact off eBay. He always gets a bad vibe before making what could be bad purchases and moves on. His mistake was telling Artie about the vibes. "You want me to do what?" Pete asks as he looks between the computer and Artie. "You said you get bad vibes from various things on eBay." Artie's giving him the look like he's an idiot, and Pete knows he doesn't mean it, but this is one of Artie's stranger plans. "I want you to find items that give you a bad vibe. Bookmark them, research them, and possibly buy them." "Easiest artifact retrieval ever," Claudia chimes in from the sidelines. Pete moves to sit at the table. "You're helping with the research. You and Micah and Steve." "Sure," Claudia says as she moves towards the inner door of the office, heading out into the warehouse. "Absolutely," Artie says as he follows her.
"I hate you both," Pete says to the empty air as he opens up Firefox and pulls Artie's plate of cookies across the table. The end. This has been Agents and eBay, written by Amarasu and read by the Patty for the informal Twitter Podfic Exchange 2014 for Silly Cleo. This work was inspired by Pack Me Up, I'm Sold by Netgirl Y2K. The original story text can be found at archiveofourown.org/works/974568. Pack Me Up, I'm Sold, written by Netgirl Y2K and read by the Patty. A Warehouse 13 fic, pairing Micah Baring, Helena H.G. Wells. Tagged for established relationship. Additional notes following the fic. The sign over the shop read, "Baring and Wells, purveyors of rare books and unusual antiques." Helena had argued for Wells and Baring, but Micah said, "Give it up, H.G. I've got the alphabet on my side." Leaving the warehouse was the hardest decision Micah has ever had to make, and to her surprise, it was Artie who took it best. Do you know how many warehouse agents end up going evil or insane or both? "At least this way, I won't have to worry about you." "But you," Artie growled at Helena, "you I will always worry about." Helena beamed at that like it was the biggest compliment she'd ever received. Pete had a few abandonment issues to work through, though. But in the end, he wrapped Micah in an enormous bear hug and made her promise to call every day, twice a day. Claudia took it the hardest, going so far as to refuse to share her secret recording of Pete giving an awkward, mortifying, "What are your intentions towards Micah?" speech to H.G. But Claudia was still young enough that she didn't understand why anyone would ever leave the warehouse, short of being dragged out by the Budweiser Clydesdales. Micah extracted solemn promises from Pete and Steve that they'd look after her and hope that she'd get over it, given time. It actually surprised Micah how readily Helena agreed. After all, she knew exactly how Helena felt about the warehouse. Micah thought that in most normal relationships, being unsure if your girlfriend loved a giant pseudo-IRS warehouse more than you would be considered a deal-breaker. But being involved with Helena Wells meant any number of strange, irritating, endlessly wonderful things. Very few of them normal. "I did my best work as a freelancer," was all Helena said. And later, standing in front of the shop looking at their new sign, Helena tucked her arm through Micah's and said, "You know, I think this is going to be rather fun being in trade. In retrospect, Micah was prepared to admit that attempting to conduct a secret lesbian affair under the noses of trained investigators, also Pete, hadn't been her greatest ever plan. But it did mean that Helena had never been there in the mornings for Micah to discover that she's an unrepentant blanket stealer. Helena was also not a morning person, claiming with a completely straight face that a conversation before the first cup of tea had been drunk was nothing short of barbaric. And she quickly became addicted to something called Doctor Who on BBC America. Okay, it was Micah who had introduced her to the show, but it was still entirely Pete's fault. If it hadn't been for him, Micah wouldn't even know what Doctor Who was. I still think the Doctor should travel back in time and meet H.G. Wells, said Helena, as Micah slid her hand under her shirt, attempting to distract her. Helena? Oh. Helena shifted until she was straddling Micah's lap. Agent Baring, I've been shamefully neglecting you. Please allow me to apologize. Oh, if you insist, Micah said, and Helena kissed her soundly. It would be possible to track Helena's progression through the shop and apartment by the scraps of paper she littered behind her, containing circuit diagrams, schematics, and dialogue from the middle pages of unwritten novels. Micah was leafing through a few of those as she was making her daily call to Pete. Mike, you okay? Pete, I think HG's trying to build a TARDIS. There was a long pause, and then Pete said, Okay, if she succeeds, I'm moving in with you. Just when life was going quietly, which was different, a good different, if kind of boring, Micah had to go and pick up Helena from a police station, where she had been questioned in connection with a dead body. Micah, you have to know that. It was Agatha Christie's typewriter, Micah interrupted. Come on, the body in the library? We've got her typewriter in the shop. How did that happen? Micah gave Helena her best. Why are you licking that, Pete? Look, and said, And this, HG, is why we don't bid on random things on eBay at 3 a.m. Helena gave her an innocent butter wouldn't melt look, which somehow managed to be completely sinful. Of course not, darling. Micah spent 20 minutes on Helena's homemade Farnsworth with Claudia, berating her for telling Helena about eBay. Claudia started laughing after 5 minutes and didn't stop, so Micah guessed that all was forgiven once again. So, who's coming to bag this thing? Micah asked. I will, said Claudia, as Pete tried to wrestle her Farnsworth out of her hand, shouting, Me! Me! And Steve said, Hey, I want to come too. In the background, Micah heard Artie say, in tones of deepest sarcasm, Why don't you all go? Don't worry about me. I'll hold down the fort here. They must have taken him at his word, because 5 hours later, Claudia, Pete, and Steve turned up in the shop, all grinning like idiots. Micah was reshelving books. Customers don't seem to understand that she has a system. It's something she and her dad can talk about on their calls now. When a first edition of The Hound of Baskerville started howling at her. Well, said Helena, raising her voice to be heard over the book, I'll call Claudia and ask her to send us some goo. The ringing of the front doorbell woke them up. Well, it woke Micah up. Helena, still not a morning person, still a shameless cover hogger, attempted to stick her head under the pillows and said,
There's someone at the door.
Micah pulled on a dressing gown and headed downstairs through the shop. It wouldn't be a customer. The shop was dark and the clothes sign was up. Well, it had been a gift from Claudia, so it was really a gone to save the world sign. Outside was a delivery guy with a package that Micah signed for.
Back in the apartment, Helena was steeping tea, had put the coffee machine on for Micah, and was capable of the rudiments of human interaction. Who was it? Micah put the package on the table and handed Helena the card with a quick good morning kiss. The package was from Claudia, the third this week, and all the cards said the same thing.
We're running low on shelf space. Keep this somewhere safe. I think we need to get that sign maker back, Helena said.
Yes, warehouse 13A, agreed Micah.
The end. This has been Pack Me Up, I'm Sold, written by Netgirl Y2K, and read by the Patty. For the informal Twitter Podfix Exchange 2014 for Silly Cleo. The original story text can be found at archiveofourown.org/works/580870. Thanks for listening.